I'm a grateful alcoholic and an addict, and I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and my name and my problem is George. And I'm going to start off with that. I want to talk about my journey to Christ and to the cross. It's a little different than I normally talk about. I'll talk about how I got to the steps. I don't want to talk a lot about where I came from, because if you're sitting in here and you've been in any of the rooms for any of the reasons, we all struggle with addiction of one form or another, whether it's alcoholism, codependency, interdependency, no dependency, dysfunction. I mean, the words go on and on. I was born in 1949. I had health problems when I was born. I was born with my legs crossed. My mother had a partial hysterectomy. I was what they called the God's child back then, because they don't do partial hysterectomies anymore. And my mother used to say, well, baby, Jesus Moses was born, and that's pretty much what it was. I was born Jewish. I had a very religious upbringing. My grandfather died at around the age of 7, and just didn't understand why you had to pray to go to temple on the holidays when a grandparent or a parent died, and I just turned my back on religion, or at least that's my belief. I don't know if that's the truth, but it's my truth growing up. I had a friend of mine who lived next house for me on Eastern Parkway. I'm going way back now. Her name was Patty. She went to St. Matthew's Church. And I talk about Patty because Patty was allowed to do things on different days than I was. And if I did those things, I was never going to make the merits of God. And if she did what I did, she wouldn't make it. And I was very confused. So we had this thing back in those days called religious instruction. And I went to the Jewish religious instruction, I was a young kid, and I figured, you know, I wanted to know how the other half lived. So I pasted the top part of it where it tells you what religious instruction you were going to. And when my mother signed it, I went to Christian religious instruction that semester. So I was lying, cheating, and manipulating long before I was drinking and drugging. I always tell that story about religious instruction because I had a very wonderful upbringing with a religious instruction. My defiance to God had nothing to do with my teachings. It came from an internal problem that was going on. My grandfather died around the same time. I was 7 years old. When he died, it was a very devastating blow to me. My grandfather was my God. He was my idol. He was my everything, because my father worked 3 jobs and I never saw him around. And I believe God was pulling at my heart for a very long time. It was my rebellion to God that I want to talk about, and how I ended up changing that and where I changed that. I was abused at that age by 3 men dressed as women. I was shopping. I was shopping for my family, and we were always taught when I was growing up, always be nice to the older people, take their packages, bring them home. I did, and then these 2 women said, would you like milk and cookies? I said, yes. I got a lot more than milk and cookies. And that's where I believe my world got discolored and my life changed. I don't know if that's where my addiction started, but that's where not feeling good about myself, that's where I felt dirty, that's where I felt unloved and unwanted, and I couldn't bring it to my family because of the way I was brought up. My dark secret. Took a long time to deal with that. So right after that, I started cutting Hebrew school. I used to steal, I tell this joke, it's not a joke, I used to steal the little they used to call them pushkas, the little boxes. They used to go collect money, and I used to open them up with a bobby pin, and I used to take the money out of them and say I couldn't collect anything, because that's what I did as a kid. I used to rob parking meters, and I used to just take things that didn't belong to me because I was trying to fill myself up for something to make me feel good. And my relationship with God had ended at that point. So I was cutting Hebrew school, and I got caught, and I went to my Hebrew school scarred because my mother took a swing at me. I tried to duck, and she caught me in the face, and I went with 3 scars down there. And I didn't go to Hebrew school for a long time, and what ended up happening was I had 3 days to learn my Haftorah, and I learned it in 3 days. I had no choice in the matter. Parents are like that. And I was still struggling because I was allowed to be off on certain holidays. My friends had different holidays, and I was very confused about that. And I was very kosher in my house. That's the only way I know to say that. So my sisters who were in broke me of that habit. And I got up to my bar mitzvah, and I got through my bar mitzvah, and my whole bar mitzvah was a weekend of drinking because it was a big to-do, and I was drunk that whole time. And then I got into high school. I was a teenager, and in high school, I used to cut school. I used to drink. I used to meet one of my teachers in the bar because that's what I did. My real name is the same name of a famous poet. And he used to always say to me, when are you going to write? I said, when I'm high and dry. You know, I never got high and dry. I was always high, never dry. And that's how I went through high school. I don't remember much high school, but I graduated with a high average. My high school was about cutting school, going down to the village or going down to the bowling alley or the pool rooms and drinking. That's how I went through high school. That's how I remember high school. My sister at that time married out of religion. Big blow up in the family. Very confusing. And that same time was Vietnam and the war was going on. And I was wanted to go into the war, so I forged my mother's name, still lying and cheating, and signed some papers, and they found out that it wasn't legal. And they didn't let me go, and so if I'm going to go to war, I wanted to become a draft dodger. That's how I changed that. And I still had no belief system, and I was searching for a god of my misunderstanding at that time. I tried Est, I tried TM, I went to churches, I went to temples. I was just no connection, even though I was in there physically. I was trying to get good. I was not trying to make a relationship. And meanwhile, God was still tugging at my heart. I met a young girl when I was in college. Her name was Mary L. I will not use her last name. And Mary was very Catholic, and we were going to get married, and it became, well, if you got to get married in church, then we got to get married in temple. It was an argument, and we ended up breaking up. And meanwhile, God was still pulling at my heart, bringing me in that way. So I went to college, then my majors became frat houses and the student lounge. I never went to school. And I was doing that to get out of work a lot. And then I ended up going to work at Sears and Roebuck. And while I was working in Sears and Roebuck, Woodstock came along and really put me on a different path completely. And while I was in Sears, I got asked to leave the job for intellectual dishonesty. I was stealing on paper, in other words, you know. And they terminated my job, and I went up to Woodstock, and I decided this was a lot of fun. So through Woodstock, I got an opportunity, as I got a little older, and to go to work at the airport, Kennedy Airport, putting films on the airplanes. Now, if you know anything about airplanes, when you drop the pods down, you can block those little side aisles and those little metal cans, and in those little metal cans, the little bottles of booze. I was taking a lot of little bottles of booze out of those airplanes. And I used to say to everybody, I'm only drinking these little bottles of booze. And somebody said to me, 35 of those bottles a day is not a little drinking. And I just didn't see it. I just did not see what I could not see. I worked my way up out of that, working at the union in the movie theaters. I started in the pornography industry on 42nd Street and ended up becoming the chief projectionist at the Ziegfeld Movie Theater on 54th Street. And I met my... I became a union official. I became as a union official, I had to work. I was working on the SIC committee. That's great. You know, I was sick and I didn't even know I was on the committee. And I ended up meeting this young lady who looked like my very first girlfriend, that girl I talked about, Mary L. And Joan, I just decided it seemed like a great idea. 21 days later, we were married. And 8 years later, we divorced. It took 8 years to get divorced. And there was no relationship there. And there was no relationship with God about it. But in that meantime, we tried TM, and we did Est, and we did all kinds of things while I was still searching for God, and still did not know God was there all the time. I went to work in the union. I worked my way up to the business agent while I was the assistant business agent of the union in New York, and it had to do with the movie theaters. I walked into the lawyer's office one day and met this beautiful girl that was working behind the desk. And in New York, if you work for a law firm, you got to be 21 or older. I was 34 at the time, 33 at the time, and I met this young lady, and we got together on all different kinds of substances and drinking and partying, and I made her pregnant. And we decided amongst us that we would get married, and I went in to get married. We went into the city hall, and when I got to city hall, I found out her age was 15. I was 33, and I fell very much in love with her. Still no God in my life. She was very Catholic. Roman Catholic, Cuban, and 18 months less, one day later, I had a little girl, and that little girl was born with a hole in the heart, a brain problem, and a lung problem. I prayed to God that day. prayed to God that day that baby would make it. And I didn't feel I deserved that child in my life. And that was the first time I asked for help. No help came. She was separated from my mother. She ended up being a wonderful little child. 6 months after that, I came home one day, and my ex-wife was with my best friend. So that was my bottom. That was 1987. That bottom lasted from 1987 to 1993. December of 93, it was very cold on the streets of New York. I went to everywhere I swore I'd never go. That's where my addiction was. There was no God. There was no nothing. I wanted to die and couldn't die. I was that empty inside, and nothing was going to fill me. No drink, no drug, no woman, no nothing. And I couldn't kill myself. My disease had me. My addiction had me. And I always joke because I used to go to 28th Street and 8th Avenue and go into this church. And I used to get online while I had money in my pocket to the soup kitchens and get food. The churches were very good to me. Still wouldn't pray. Still defiant, still rebellious. And my bottom came because I decided somewhere in that Christmas, before that Christmas, I wanted my kids back. And I wanted to deal with my ex-wife. And I wanted to have some kind of friendship or relationship, which I never thought would happen. What ended up happening was I went to an assistant employee program that I helped start 5 years before for people in the union who had a problem with drugs and alcohol. And I told the woman's name is Jean M. And I told Jean about this guy who had all these problems, and he did all these drugs, and he had all these drinking problems going on. But he kept a job for 26 years, so he couldn't be an alcoholic or an addict. So she said, why don't you bring him here? So we made an appointment for this guy to come. And I show up, and she said, where's the guy? I said, here I am. And that was in around the 17th or 18th of January of 1994. Still didn't believe in God. Still had no relationship with God, no relationship with Christ, and no relationship with myself. It's kind of hard to have a relationship with God when you're not even trusting in yourself in any way. I had to have a relationship with me before I can get to Christ. Went up to this treatment center, and the first guy I met was an old biker. His name was Carl K. And he gave me, I had options, always had options. First option was from Gene. I could either stay in New York and go to a hospital and then go up to Connecticut or go upstate New York. I had people looking for me, so I wanted to split town real quick. So when they say geographicals don't work, that's not my experience. I ran upstate, and that's where I started my recovery. And I met this guy named Carl K. And Carl was an old biker, a real cool guy. I really liked him a lot because he was a tough guy, and I kept saying, I'm going to try. And he said, if you're going to try, you're going to die. You're either going to do this or not. And then we got to this third step in treatment, and they talked about God, and I wasn't talking to God. I wasn't ready for God, and I least of all was not ready for Christ in my life at that time. And they brought in a rabbi to talk to me. He would quote something. I would fight with him. Spoke to a minister. He would quote something. I would fight with him. And then I met this guy. His name was Chaplain Joe. And Chaplain Joe was the kind of guy that Vietnam vet, one leg, one eye, bad arm, wounded in the war, sat down and says, I don't care what you believe in, believe that we believe. And pray to whatever's up there and ask him not let you use today. And that was my prayer life where it started. And I did. I just like Chaplain Joe. There was something about him that touched my heart, maybe because he was so rough around the edges. And I was supposed to leave after a God story with my mother that happened. My mother... I was supposed to be there for 28 days. I went up there thinking I was going to summer camp. I packed the bathing suit and figured, you know, this was going to be fun. And when I got there, they told me there's no detox for you and you're out of here in 7 days. On day five, they got that same woman who I helped set up that assistant employee program with called to let me know through my union that my mother had a massive heart attack and she wanted to speak to me. Next day, I ended up calling because I was afraid to speak to her. Figured if she didn't hear from me for 5 years while I lived on the street, hearing from me now would kill her. And that same woman set up a three-way call. Today we call it an intervention. Back then it was the grace of God, and I didn't even know it. Retrospect is a wonderful thing. And what ended up happening is I got to speak to my mom for the first time in about 5 years. And I don't know what I heard when I walked out of there, but all I knew is I want another chance at this. And I swore I would chase this the way I chased my drinking and my drugging. And all my other inappropriate behaviors, there was a lot of them. And then I stayed there. That 1 week ended up being 14 days, then it became 21 days, then it became 28 days, then I graduated. Love that one. And I went to a service, and this service is really where I believe my heart started opening up to inviting Christ in. It was a non-denominational service, and I'm sitting in the service, and there was a deacon there, and there was usually a lot of people, and they make a big circle, they make a whole to-do when everybody leaves, and it was just me and one other young lady. And this deacon put his hand on me, and I was praying in Jewish because I didn't know how to pray any other way. And he put his hand on my head and her head and said a little prayer, and somehow I knew I was going to be all right. I didn't know how I was going to be all right, but I knew I was going to be all right. First spiritual experience, didn't know it at the time. Got on a bus, and then as soon as I got a bus, there was a 38 hours from hell, I call it, because I took me to New York, and I went to every dealer and bar I knew to tell all the guys I didn't need them because I was fixed, and I graduated. And that's the way I looked at it, you know. And I got on, and the guy in the, on the bus next to me pulled out a stem, lit it up. I didn't even get through the tunnel, and I was ready to go get high. So when they say relapse happens long before we pick up, I was ready to go. But before we got to the other end of that tunnel, it was God showing himself. Guy got arrested. They stopped us in the middle of the tunnel. Didn't know that at the time. Get to Maryland house. Three guys get taken off for getting drunk on the Boone's Farm brandy or whatever it was. They were kept offering it to me. This young lady, her name was Nikki Simone, never forget her, came over to me and she said, "Are you in a 12-step program?" I said, "No, I just graduated from so-and-so. Do you know Bill W?" "Bill who?" 28 days, didn't know even know who I was, where I came from, what I was doing. Got to Fairfax, Virginia, and my luggage, I was so clear when I left that treatment center. I wrote my where I was going to where I've been to where I was going, so I had no luggage. I had no bus. I had no more bus ticket. I didn't know where I was going to go when I got there. She 12-stepped me. She was an adult child of an alcoholic. She talked to me from Fairfax, Virginia, all the way to Tampa, Florida. But there was another blessing that happened at that Fairfax station. I had nothing to read. I walked in. There was a books on the there were books on the shelf, and you're in the Bible Belt in Virginia there. And I grabbed this book, and it said "Wisdom from the Bible, Proverbs." It's a little short story. One or two lines out of a proverb, a little short story, and then a prayer. And I read that for my first 5 years of recovery every day, and it was very influential in my walk through Christ. And that book became a very important part of me. I never found Nikki Simone. I never saw her again. All I know is if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I'd be here today. I got off the bus and in Deerfield, in Pompano, actually, and there was nobody there to pick me up from my wonderful halfway house at the time, and I had to ask a cop for help. If you're me, you don't ask a cop for anything, especially help. And when I got there, I got out of the back of a police car, the halfway house didn't want to let me in. Go figure. So I had a fight to get into the halfway house. That was my first experience with that halfway house that I now work for. Go figure that one out. And my very first meeting was in Joan of Arc. It was right around the corner from the halfway house I came from, and I always mention that church because there was a temple across the street, and I really didn't know where to go. And I used to wear a star with a cross, a star with a cross in it. And people used to say, "Oh, you're a Jew for Jesus." I said, "No. Well, why are you wearing that cross?" I had a respect to my mother and father, and a respect to my children. I'm a firm believer in what I learned, that women carry the religion, so my children are Catholic, whether I like it or not. And I was born Jewish, whether I like it or not. That's the way it was, so I did it out of respect. And I was not walking into a temple, because the ceilings would fall. I really believe that. That was my belief. So I used to go into the chapel in Joan of Arc, and I used to take my little Jewish star with my cross and dip it in the holy water. Real clear on how things worked when I got here. And would turn around and say, "Listen, I know you're up there. Would you go across the street and tell the guy over there that I'm okay?" And that was my prayers at the beginning. It really was how simple they had to be. And I want to talk now about the journey that happened after that. I did the 12 steps in the big book. I did the 12 steps and you just mentioned it, at the back to basics. My sponsor was an original Oxford group. So I had a lot of the strong, old Christian roots already put into me. I'm looking at Linda. She knows where I'm going. Bruce was with me when I walked in these rooms. He had a year more than I did when I walked in these rooms. And Bruce and I walked the journey. We did a Crucio together. We did two Crucios together. And that was a short course in Christianity. And that's where my life started changing. I made my commitment in 1997. I got sober in 1994. I made a commitment into a third step to Jesus Christ on April 26th of 1997. And I'd like to say that everything came back to me because I made a relationship with Christ. It didn't work that way for me at all. I went through a very slow recovery, you know. And some of the people along the way are very important. There was a guy by the name of Dennis O. Dennis O. was a very Christian guy. He was my landlord, believe it or not. But when I first got here, he's a Bible reader. And he used to read the Bible to me every day, whether I wanted it or not. I'd read the big book, he'd read the Bible. And we went back and forth. We'd argue. I'd say something, he'd say, what does the Bible say? What are the Ten Commandments say? He used to drive me crazy, but he kept opening my heart a little more. See, I was being conditioned for something I didn't know was going to happen. And it really did. And then I got the honor of, through Dennis O., I got involved with a set of books called the Golden Books for people around a long time ago. It was written, and there's a book called Sobriety and Beyond. It's very Christian writing. It was by the first priest before Father Martin that opened up to his addiction to other priests to help them. So I was reading this stuff, not knowing why I was reading it. I was reading it, though. And then I met Larry S., who got me involved in the Golden Keys, my third step with Emmett Fox, who was also a different kind of a writer. And through that, I got to talk to a guy by the name of Ben Troxell and Kathy Troxell. Ben and Kathy were very close to me because I had to give my children up. I was sober 6 months, and I was served with papers to give my kids up. I came to get sober and get my kids back. What is this thing? I'm doing the right thing. Why aren't I getting the right rewards? That's the way I thought. And I'll tell you where that leads me. That leads me to Galatians, but we'll get to that in a minute. And Ben asked me the question, what kind of custodian was I to those children? Oh, I gave him the cars, I gave him the house. You know, I asked what you did for them. I asked what kind of custodian you were, and I realized I was an emotionally absent father. And that's when my recovery got very real. And I'm still praying, and I'm doing the whole thing, and I got to go to church a lot. I went with a young lady by the name of Charlotte because I had a moving blood clot in my leg. And she used to take me to Calvary. And because of Calvary, I ended up doing a Crucio. And because of that Crucio, I got to be a whole wonderful thing happened. And I just can't talk about a Crucio unless you've been at one. And it was Via de Christa. I am Via de Christa. I was in Men's 53 in 1997. And I'm very proud to say I sat at the table of Paul. And that's a very big part of my life. And Bruce was a very big part of that for me. And I had a lot of problems. I like the 11th step. You know, we read the 11th step, saw it through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. God was in contact with me all along. I was just not conscious. That's what was going on here. And it was going on for a long time. And what ended up happening is I had the ability to do a fifth step about being on the road with Dion. And Dion suggested that I read the Bible. And I was so anti-Bible, I said no. He said, you read the big book enough. Why don't you read the Bible? Take it as a history book. Well, not only did I read the Bible, I made a commitment myself to read 3 pages a day. I ended up reading 10. I read the Old Testament, and I read the New Testament within a year. And then I made a recommitment to Christ. And I make that commitment every day, and I do a third step. I've been on spiritual retreats. My very first one, I was less than 6 months. And I love the story that goes with this. I was brand new. I went with Boca Men's Recovery, and we went on a spiritual retreat. I was given the gift of going by the retreat itself. And on the way there in 6 months, I had a lot of problem with prayer and meditation. I mean, I did the steps. I did whatever I was told. I was just not connected and couldn't figure out why. And I walked into it's no longer there. It's it was a Christian store right on Yamato and Federal Highway, for those people who remember it. And I walked in there, and there was a book. It was called Between Heaven and Earth by Ken Gear. And I looked at it, and there was some words in there, and it was a prayer by a priest, a prayer by Abe Lincoln, a prayer by all different kinds of people, the little story from a woman named Casey Tyler, who talks of Between Heaven and Earth, all kinds of great stuff about angels, all kinds of things. The book was $20. I was not making enough to make my rent, and I kept looking at that book. And I went over, put it under my arm, and I walked over to the lady at the counter. I said, where's the prayer meditation? She sent me right back to where I came from. I sat down for an hour and read every book that was there, and I kept putting that book under my arm and saying, I can't afford this. They're going to throw me out because I'm not going to have my rent. And I put the book down, and as I started to walk out, here's a God moment, I turned around, and I remembered being, when I was brand new sober, there was a little book for a dollar that I didn't buy about solitude. It was something out of the big book. And I said, I cannot not buy this book. Well, I bought the book, and then I was worried the whole weekend during the retreat how I was going to not get thrown out for not having the rent. And what ended up happening is that Sunday night I worked at Denny's, and there was two people in there that were having coffee. And they said, can I leave you the money on the table? And I said, yes. And there was $25 on that table. I said, you made a mistake. I ran out after them, and they said, we were taught to practice random acts of kindness. And what ended up happening was I said, but that's too much. She says, no, you deserve that. When I paid the bill, the amount of tip was exactly what the cost of the book was. So I don't believe in coincidences anymore. And there were some people along my journey that were real important to me. There was a guy by the name of Father Hanley who came out of Fort Lauderdale Men's Group, and Pastor Connie's gone now, and Zeke, and there was Mike Lewandowski, who was Lamb of God. These were people that I used to go listen to do 12 steps, and they were all talking about Christ, but I wasn't hearing that. I was hearing the spiritual message, and that's what I needed. And of course, Garrett Muldoon, which a lot of us know, has always been on my journey. So these people were always touching my heart, and so was Christ. After I became a new believer, and after I was baptized, and I went to these Via de Christis, I was struggling a lot with my family issues. We talked about family issues. And my family issues with my children. I'm watching people get their children back. I'm watching all kinds of wonderful things happen to everybody but me. And I wanted to know when it was going to be my turn. It took 14 years before my daughter picked up a phone and called me to find out who her father was. That's the bad news. My son still doesn't talk to me. That's 20 years later. But the good news is my daughter was down here for a week last week, and I had a wonderful time. So, you know, just because I'm ready for things doesn't mean God's ready to give them to me. Just because of the way I believe, there's a whole lot today, because my relationship with Christ has been wonderful. And it's been a hard walk, you know. And I was thinking before the meeting of, you know, where I go, there's two things I always believe in. One is Hebrews 11:1, about faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Faith we get by, evidence I get to see by being here a while. Faith I got to see. The substance is the people in the room that when I walked in here or in the church, and the people who are true believers, they give me that thing in my heart that I wanted. But I got to be around a while to get it. And that was the hard thing for me. I didn't know how to stay. And I never relapsed. That was a gift. I mean, the reason I didn't relapse, there's a guy named Dennis Rhodes who was one of my sponsors along the way. And Dennis always used to say, remember Galatians. So tonight I wanted to respect to my friend Dennis. Galatians 21, envy, drunkenness, carousing. These are the things of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit, and that's what we're talking about here, the fruit of the Spirit, the joys we get, is love, joy, peace, patience. Patience is long-suffering, in case anybody doesn't know it. Kindness, goodness, and faithfulness. Gentleness, self-control. Against these things, there is no law. And these are the things that we learn as we do our walk. Some things we go through on this journey is very, very painful. I don't want to end with a quote from the Bible, but I do want to end with a quote from the big book, because it's really important. As an alcoholic and an addict and an abuser of many substances, and the list can go on, you know, there's a part in the big book, and there is a solution. And this is what that says, you know, God will do for you what you can't do for yourself, and then I really believe that today. And you know, we have two choices. We can go on the way we are and block out this process and not let God in our hearts and invite Christ in if you're a believer. But the other is to accept that spiritual help. And this you do because you honestly want to and willing to do the effort. And it means work. Effort means work. And in the big book, in the 12 and 12, this is what it says. We discover that we do receive guidance for our lives to the just that about the extent that we stop making demands upon God to give it to us on our terms. Almost any experienced AA will tell you how his affairs have taken remarkable and unexpected turns for the better as he tried to improve his conscious contact with God. He will report out of every season of grief or suffering. When the hand of God seemed heavy or unjust, new lessons for living were learned, new resources of courage were uncovered, and finally, inexplicably, the conviction came that God does move in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. I have been blessed. I have suffered plenty with health. The people who know me know I suffer with health. I am a gift of God, from God, and keeps me around, and I still am confused of why when I had 6.5 years and I was told I had 6 months to live, I stand before you today. That's a testament to God. Thanks for letting me share.